the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
The Mayans were found to be a very highly developed civilization. They lived in the jungle of Mexico and Central America. The Mayan culture was the most developed culture in the world of ancient America. This culture ruled the Pitans and Yucatanese Peninsula for thousands of years. 40 to 50 years ago, everyone thought the Mayans were a peace-loving community who studied the movement of planets, lived their own world. But recent readings of hieroglyphics and fortresses found in excavations show the Mayans were also very violent and perhaps one of the most war-prone people in the ancient world. The Mayans were very intelligent, as evidenced by their books and calendars, studies of astronomy, the number system. It's amazing that Mayans lived in Central America's tropical rainforest, because that was a very difficult place to build mighty cities and at the same time invent some of the best inventions in the world. Many anthropologists have decided that the Mayan culture developed someplace other than the rainforest, as the rainforest was just too hostile an environment to build mighty cities. The Mayans lived apparently 2000 BC to 1524 AD. Their calendar stopped at 2012 AD. Why? And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Jonathan Zapp. Jonathan, the Mayans, I think a pretty accurate description of who they were. What it doesn't tell us is why they did what they did. What does some of your research show you?
Well, I have to give the credit to my friend and colleague, John Major Jenkins, who has made an astoundingly significant discovery in the 1980s that I think will directly answer your question. And the answer to what 2012 means and how they why they came up with that is in an ancient site, Izapa. And this is a site that's one of the more ancient sites. It goes back to 2,100 years ago, about 100 years before the birth of Christ. It was in its heyday. And that was when they created the end date of 2012. And there's a particular monument. There's a picture of it in the first of the DVDs, Dialogues About Prophecy and the End of Time, where the pieces really come together. And if people really want to find the rigorous details of how this was discovered and what it means and all the evidence, they can go to John's book, Maya Cosmogenesis 2012. What he discovered was that the Maya were aware of a process called galactic alignment, and many other cultures were too, which is even more astounding, and he covers that in his book, Galactic Alignment. Mm-hmm. And there is a 26,000-year cycle that happens between galactic alignments, and in that cycle, there are four great ages, and these are, again, recognized by a number of different cultures. The Hindus, for example, called them yugas, and according to their nomenclature, we are in the Kali Yuga. Now, these four ages, the Western alchemists and some of the other cultures identified them with four metals: gold, silver, bronze, and iron. Now, what's interesting is that these metals, though they couldn't necessarily have known it at the time, are increasing in atomic density as you go from gold to iron.
Right.
What's also happening as you go through these four ages is that spiritual light is decreasing by one quarter, 25%, as you go from the gold age to the silver age to the bronze age to our present age, the iron age. And basically, the iron age, and these ages are roughly about 6,500 years each, the present age is basically the entire period that we call history. And the entire period that we call history has been characterized, not just for the Maya, but the 20th century had the highest per capita homicide war death rate, and it was pursued by supposedly civilized Western countries. And, this is James Joyce character, Stephen Dedalus, said, "History is the nightmare from which I am trying to awaken." Now, if the perennial philosophy is correct in galactic alignment and that date means what the Mayans thought it did, it is not about an apocalypse, unless that is the precursor, the shock to bring on the return of the light and of increasing spiritual awakening. Again, it's a turning point, like the winter solstice. After the night has gotten as long as it can get, then the day has to start increasing.
Why do you think they ended at 2012, Jonathan? Why didn't go into 2050?
Mm-hmm. Well, they ended it because they had because 2012, and we are in the zone right now. You know, if you consult with astronomers,
there's no turning back.
Absolutely, and this is why, you know, this is what Art calls the quickening. We see the metabolism of the species heating up. That no observer could be so naive as to not see that this is an intensifying process. And so we are experiencing 2012 right now because the center of the galaxy is large, so John doesn't emphasize that specific date, that specific moment, whereas some others like Terrence McKenna does. We are in the zone right now, and we are seeing many of the things. This is the interesting thing. We are seeing many of the things that theory of cycles would predict. We are seeing an increase in light, even though we are also seeing an increase in dark right now as we are on the cusp of this cycle. And it's even turning up in people's dreams. For example, a young man told me a dream last spring where he had a recurrent dream that haunted his childhood. And those are the really significant dreams. When a dream repeats, then especially a childhood dream, that's often mapping out the mythology of that whole person's incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And what would happen to him is he would always be at the bottom of a red pit, and he would be standing there, and a gigantic steamroller would be coming toward him. Now, this dream can be described in just a couple of sentences, but it actually has a great depth of meaning. Okay, he's in a red pit. Now, this has a connection to the Iron Age. A pit would be red for the same reason that Mars is the red planet, which is the same reason that our blood is red, and that reason is iron oxide. Okay, and the thing that's coming toward him, a symbol of the technological age, is a steamroller, which would be made out of steel, which is merely the modern alloy of iron. So basically the dream is showing him in the situation of the Iron Age, the age of almost complete eclipse of light. And this is very much what Tolkien wrote about too. And Tolkien was haunted, and his son Michael as well, by a recurrent dream. And the dream was about Atlantis. He would be standing in a field and he would see this gigantic wave come up. In the Tolkien mythology, Numenor, the great age of Numenor, was meant to represent the age of Atlantis. And so the Tolkien story, which is absolutely gripping the collective imagination right now, and deservedly so, it's the most popular book after the Bible, is about a cycling of ages. It's right at that cusp of where the ages are about to cycle. And what happens as Frodo is approaching the cracks of doom is that the metal ring that he has with him, that's made of the most impervious, the most dense of metals, and the most evil of artifacts, it gets heavier as he gets closer to the cracks of doom. Well, the cracks of doom actually relate to something that the Maya understood about galactic alignment. We have only very recently begun to realize that the center of our galaxy, like the center of many galaxies, there's a black hole. Now, Mayan epigraphers deciphering some of the hieroglyphs.
And they did all this without what kind of equipment did they have, Jonathan?
They had the greatest equipment that you could possibly have to understand almost anything, which is the human psyche.
Good point.
They didn't have radio telescopes.
Nope.
But what they had is what we call gnosis. They had the inner knowing. Because you know what? The universe is like a hologram. It's like a fractal. The small part recapitulates the whole. The same rules and principles that govern your body and your psyche are the same ones that govern the whole universe. So by going deep inside yourself, you tap into the secrets of everything, because inner and outer break down at that point. And so they had gnosis, and they did something that we don't do a whole lot of. They looked a lot at the night sky, and they made a lot of very interesting observations. They were very well able to see the galactic center. And of course, they didn't have all the artificial light and pollution that interferes with naked eye astronomy. And they also were at the equator, where it's much easier to see that nuclear bulge in the center of the Milky Way. And so the black hole is actually referred to in some of the monuments at Azapa. There's a hieroglyph. And again, I'm not the expert on this. This is what I've learned from John Jenkins' work. But Mayan epigraphers who decipher these hieroglyphs found one that says black hole.
That's just amazing.
To the galactic center.
Just amazing that they would have this ability to do this.
It is absolutely amazing. But Tolkien, not probably even knowing that about the Maya, but in touch with that collective unconscious, came up with a very similar thing in his mythology, the Cracks of Doom. The Cracks of Doom is the one place where even the most indestructible of objects, the One Ring, can be dissolved or irrealized, just like with the black hole. It is a place where dense reality is broken down. And we are seeing evidence of that kind of influence at work, where we went into the Industrial Age, we went into a greater and greater movement toward materialism, and toward loss of spirituality, and toward relying on external means. That's part of the symbolism of the ring is it's about putting all your power and your magic into an external object. So we are the kings of that. But even with that, it has now turned a corner, and even technology is now starting to be irrealized and etherealized. For example, during the 1990s, the value of the industrial production of the United States tripled. But at the same time, the physical weight of our industrial production halved, because we were producing less pig iron and more pixels, more intellectual property in the form of zeros and ones.
Right.
Technology itself is starting to etherealize. And instead of iron locomotives, now we stare at pixelated screens, and we have something called Google that is almost like a Palantir, where it is totally interactive with psychic content.
See, but the Mayans didn't have this luxury.
They didn't, but, you know, for every, what's been discovered is that every tool that you pick up is a sword that cuts both ways. Every device in the external world that you rely on can weaken another part of yourself in a capacity that you have as a human being, because now you're relying on the external tool. Even the Greek philosophers realized this, and they criticized the production of writing and of text being produced, because they said, well, people will lose their memories if everything is just written down. Well, that was actually true. When there was an oral tradition, people did have much more extensive memories. So every reliance on something outside can create a weakening of something inside.
Tolkien
was emphatic about that.
Did John Major Jenkins, when he studied the Mayans, was there anything about them that he was particularly concerned about or didn't like? I mean, yes, they sacrificed people. You know, they had a very strange belief about that. But was there anything overall, Jonathan, that concerned him, do you know?
I haven't heard him say it. I mean, the emphasis on the sacrifices, it's almost like the story about the chimpanzees. You know, it gets so much attention. But we have to remember that we're the most deadly of all primates, human beings. And like when we look at another culture like the Maya, their level of violence, although it might be dramatic in the human sacrifice aspect, doesn't remotely compare to the amount of bloodshed that we've been responsible for. And I myself was down looking at the sites with John and with Jim Reed, who's president of the Maya Studies Society, a few months ago, and I had a kind of dark or weird vision there. It's described on the website, Vision at Chichen Itza. The Maya may have been doing those sacrifices for reasons that we can't quite understand. They may have been doing them because related to something that I call mind parasites.
Maybe the sacrifices were criminals, you know?
Right. Well, actually, what we do know is that one of the things you see at every Mayan site is the ball court. They had a very difficult type of a ball game that they did, and it was the winners of the ball game who got the honor of being sacrificed. You see, this is a completely different culture, and their view of reality is so different. I mean, one thing that I have to keep in mind when I'm viewing a culture that's so other is something that J.B.S. Haldane said. He said, reality is not only stranger than you think, it's stranger than you can think.
I went to Cancun several years ago, Jonathan. I was amazed at the edifices that they had. The huts, for example, made out of stone, but the doorways were only 3 feet tall. Why would people like that? I mean, they couldn't have been that small. They were small, but not that small, were they?
I don't think so. The hobbits that they've just discovered apparently were.
Were 3 feet,
But some archaeologists are saying they may not even be real. They may have been suffering from a virus or something.
Now, did Jung ever look at the Mayans as John Major Jenkins has?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm ashamed to say that I haven't gone to the index to see. I don't recall.
Nor do I.
Too many references to the Maya. He's referred to them somewhere, but I don't think he know that he had any great insight.
What about Edgar Cayce? Do you do any work about him?
No, I don't know what Edgar Cayce said about the Maya, if anything.
Okay, but he did talk about end times.
Absolutely, he did, and I think he may have made some. Wrong predictions, I'm sorry to say. You know, one idea about these great prophets, and there's no doubt that Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce are great prophets, but because of something we're learning about the nature of physical world and the multiverse and the many worlds hypothesis that most physicists now believe, these prophets may be looking out at timelines that are correct from where they're standing in time, but we may be in another timeline now. You know, there may be a timeline where what they predicted did happen when they said it would. But you and I might be talking right now in a timeline, a parallel reality where that didn't happen. And also the wild card of human free will may come in and derail some of these things that might have been the projected timeline of how things might happen from where they are. But people's free will may come in there and sort of derail it a bit.
Well, I got to tell you, some of the work that both you, John Major Jenkins, have done and what has been a very perplexing thing for me, I am fascinated by that date, December 21st, 2012. Do they ever say anything, Jonathan, about a polar shift during that period?
Well, the Maya really don't tell us, don't really supply much content as far as what's going to happen. And there's a good thing about that, which is that there's a recognition there that I believe is correct, that the future is both has determined and indeterminate elements, that to some extent it may be unformed. Now, having said that, the idea of a pole shift or some other great shock occurring around this time is not out of the range of possibility at all. You recently had a guest on who mentioned, and he was much more of a scientific background, that that there was reason to believe that because he recognized that the black hole at the center of the galaxy, which we are lining up with, that there could be a gravitational effect that might kind of upset that balance or draw solar flares out further. Because there is a certain indication here in the singularity archetype that something that from the earthbound point of view might be considered a great disaster may proceed or may be necessary to disturb the balance to create a new cycle of light. This is something that we find in the life of an individual, that shocks are necessary to create growth. It's something that we see in the paleontological record of the planet. If it wasn't for the asteroid that hit 65 million years ago, we'd be hanging out with Tyrannosaurus Rex right now.
And how strange, that asteroid also hit where the Mayans ended up.
Isn't that interesting?
Stay with us. Jonathan Zapp, our guest. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my Fast Blast questions for Jonathan in the next half hour. So those of you on your computer, go ahead and do it right now. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Get it in writing with the After Dark newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505. Radio Network presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Hey, a couple things, by the way. Had a meeting with Lex and some of our folks working with our website design. You know, the website that we have right now is our very first website when I took over Coast to Coast AM. And now it has gone through a change and some evolution. We've taken pointers from you over the last couple years. It's going through another evolution. Lex and the designers are working on some brand new things for the website that I think you will love. Printable versions, some other things that they're going to be doing, special audio features. And so you will enjoy that. Also, we're going to be installing a webcam here in the studio that we can turn on and turn off at a whim. But you'll have some fun with that, too. And also, those of you who are StreamLink members, don't forget my chat tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Pacific time, 11 o'clock Eastern time. Get on board, and we chat for an hour about all kinds of things related to Coast to Coast. One thing related to Coast is the After Dark newsletter, where you get 14 for the price of 12. Still a great deal, I think. One of the best deals in town. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's toll-free. 1-888-727-5505. Or go online at Coast2TO, coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with our guest, Jonathan Zapp. Jonathan, of all the things you have studied and investigated, what thing fascinates you the most?
I have to say it's the singularity archetype, because it is giving us some real information about what we can expect as we approach the event horizon. It does make certain predictions about trends that we see happening right now, but that also may happen in far more astounding ways as we approach it. And one of them that turns up in so many of the dreams and in the science fiction stories is something that I call Homo Gestalt. And that was a term that first turned up in a science fiction novel called More Than Human by Theodore Sturgeon, in which there was a telepathic bond between a group of sort of mutants. And this is one of the things that we see happening on a technological level with the internet, for example, and with mass communications, where we're kind of wiring into each other. It's something that haunts the popular imagination, for example. In the Star Trek world, the Borg is a Homo Gestalt. It's seen in a rather negative way. They travel around in these cube-shaped things. It's a world that doesn't seem to have many positive aspects of the feminine. But in many of the versions, the Homo Gestalt is seen quite positively, and we have this fear that you, when it's viewed fearfully, you get something like the Borg, where you will be assimilated and your individual identity is lost. But in many of the visions of Homo Gestalt, such as in the Dune books and in certain people's dreams, individual identity is fantastically expanded by connecting with other psyches in a way that is not possible right now. And, you know, in the animal world, group telepathy seems to be more of the normative reality. In flocks of birds and schools of fish, we see that animals have a great connection to that field of information, which is why they avoided the tsunami. But it served a great evolutionary purpose for us to be encapsulated in our own psyches and cut off from telepathic interpenetration, because it produced individuality, something that you don't see so much with a school of fish or with a hive-like organism like many insects. Having a firewall, even if it's a leaky one, between us in contact with other psyches, created this tremendous engine of novelty, the human psyche. And a lot of what developed was richly pathological, a lot of it was negative, but a lot of it was brilliant. And that's why we created this astounding technological world and so forth. But we have reached the end of the line with that egocentric development. Our technology is just too dangerous for it to be in the hands of people who are looking out for number one, or who are not connected with the harm that they are doing to other members of their own species and other species. And we are on the verge of that egocentric firewall breaking down. And a lot of what's reported in your show is about the breaking down of those walls. And that trend is going to intensify greatly as we approach the event horizon.
David from Orlando wants to know about psychic dreams. How often do you need to do this in order to perfect it?
Well, I'm not sure what he means by psychic dreams, but I believe that it's to everybody's advantage to try and recall their dreams every single night. This is the whole other side of our incarnation, and it is as great a amputation or loss of a function as losing your eyesight to not remember this whole other aspect of your incarnation. And people can work on that just by expressing the intention before they go to bed that I'm going to remember my dreams. And keep being persistent with it, and keep a notebook and a tape recorder, and maybe a gentle light source if you're going to use a notebook, not a 100-watt bulb, so that when you are awakened from the dream, you can write it down or record it without losing it and having it dissolve, as the overwhelming power of sense impressions tends to overwhelm the dream.
12/21/2012 could be the ending of the age of Pisces and the start of the age of Aquarius. Does that mean anything? That's from RJ in Highland, California.
It absolutely does. This is where Western astrology intersects with 2012. Just about every culture seems to recognize something about galactic alignment, and seems to recognize that galactic alignment is the turning point where one age ends and another begins. And it's very hopeful, because it suggests that the cycle of darkness is about to turn over, like with the winter solstice, into an increase of light. And we may be seeing some of that already.
Here's my answer when I asked you about small huts. The Mayans had their small stone huts. He said small doorways were for protection. This is James in San Antonio. The enemy would have to enter the hut bending over, exposing the back of his neck, and then the person who lived in the hut could take care of him as he was coming in. I never thought of that.
That's fascinating. You know, in the natural world, there's something like that with termites. They'll build a sphere inside of their termite colony with pylons, and it'll have holes that are just small enough so that a specialized type of termite can get in there to feed and protect the queen. But if they're attacked by army ants, the queen is in an isolation chamber inside, in a spherical isolation chamber, and cannot be attacked. So it's a strategy that's employed in the natural world, too.
Eric from Chicago wants to know about the Mayans and their ability to make perfect north, south, east, west roads over hundreds of miles. How'd they do this?
Not sure how they did it, but we need to have a respect for their incredible accomplishments and their knowledge of astronomy and what they learned working with astronomical data in a completely different mindset and consciousness from how we work with it.
You have, in addition to some of the things you've written about, you somehow tied in the approaching events on the horizon with a preoccupation with body image. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is one of the signs that we're at the cusp of a different age. We are more and more dissatisfied with our corporeal mortal bodies. I call this the will toward the glorified body. And we already have a glorified body. We already have a spirit body. We're an interfacing of our corporeal body and this other energy body that we experience in out-of-body experiences. I've had numerous and on a more profound level in near-death experiences. But everywhere we see people trying to rebel from the limitations of the mortal body, and they will undergo the surgeon's knife, and they will starve themselves, they will tattoo and pierce themselves. Everywhere we see a desire to get beyond this, and through technology we're trying to do this as well. Walt Disney, for example, was a person working on this. You know, he had himself cryogenically frozen. What a lot of people don't know is that after he died, a year after he died, the Disney executives were invited to a very unusual meeting. They were asked to sit in particular seats. A screen came down, and there was Walt Disney on the screen talking to them. And he would look at them in turn, and he'd say, "And Bob, how is the such-and-such project coming along?" And, you know, at the end of this, he said, "And I'll be back." Here's somebody trying to use technology to create a body that can persist beyond the grave. And this is a very big cultural trend, is our through virtual reality and through other means trying to get beyond the limits of that physical body as we move away from density and toward a return of reliance on spiritual magic and means of doing things.
Tell us a little bit more, according to Roger, about Carl Jung. How did he get so involved? He was a student of Sigmund Freud, wasn't he?
Well, they were colleagues. Jung was quite a bit younger, but Freud...
Jung was younger. I like that.
Yes, exactly. There was a lot of synchronicities going on with their names, because Freud also meant pleasure, and he had, you know, the pleasure principle.
Yeah.
They worked closely together, but there were a number of points where strange things happened between them that caused their paths to sunder. One was a parapsychological event. They were talking, and Jung was getting more and more frustrated with Freud's wanting to bring everything back to the sexuality theory.
He seemed obsessed with that, didn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was in the grips of his own daemon, though he deserves credit for being a great pioneer. Jung started to feel this heat building up in his solar plexus, and there was a loud explosion coming from a cabinet in the room. And Jung said to Freud, "Well, there you are. This is the so-called exteriorization phenomenon." And Freud said, "Oh, that's bosh. You know, I'm sure there's some natural explanation." And Jung said, "No, and as a matter of fact, I predicted in another moment there's going to be another explosion." And there was. And they found a piece of fine German cutlery that was broken into three pieces, and it was taken to a metallurgist, and there was no way of explaining why it would break apart like this. Freud wrote a letter to Jung trying to explain it away, but Jung knew that there was some reality to parapsychology. And another moment where they broke, there were a couple of fainting episodes where Freud actually fainted in Jung's arms. At one point he was incontinent in Jung's presence and admitted that it was because of a neurosis. But Jung had a dream that upset Freud quite a bit. In the dream, Jung walks into a house and he sees pictures of his ancestors, paintings on the walls. And some of these, I might have a detail offered her to, but the gist of it is correct. He then goes down the stairs, and now he's in a room that looks medieval, and there are suits of armor and so forth. He goes down still another level, and now it seems like a cave, and there are maybe cave paintings, and there are two skeletons in the cave. And basically what what Jung was being shown was that there are levels to the unconscious. Freud only wanted to go to the personal unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was like a sexual trauma you had as a child, and that's as far as he wanted to go. Freud couldn't interpret the dream, and he became very agitated because unconsciously he was sensing its implications. And finally, just to appease Freud, because Freud kept asking, well, who do you think those skeletons are? Who do you think they were? And eventually Freud said, well, Jung said, maybe it was my mother and my sister. And then Freud was satisfied because this worked with the personal unconscious. But Jung was starting to realize that to go further, he had to leave Freud, painful as it was, because he was such a person he admired and respected so much, in order to travel to those deeper layers.
Between the two of them, which one you think really had their act together? I would assume you'd say Jung.
Well, of course, I'd say Jung. Well, Jung also said, I'm glad I'm Jung and not a Jungian, so I try not to be I'm not a slavish follower of Jung by any means. He didn't get to live to see the development of the singularity archetype that I have. As I said, he left off exactly where I picked up. But he was the one that had a much greater encompassing vision of who we were and what was really going on.
Are people beginning now to dream of impending doom or more enlightenment? What's coming your way?
Okay, well, in the most of the dreams that I see, it's both of those together. Those are really the same thing, but in one case, the doom part is what the ego sees, because the ego is worried about my checking account, my shelter, my job, my relationships, and so forth.
Sure.
And that may be experiencing a tremendous shock. But on the other side of what seems like doom is actually a quantum evolutionary event. And, you know, the what seems like the worst thing in the world, because reality is stranger than we can think, could turn out to be the greatest thing in the world. And Terence McKenna had a kind of apocryphal version, a think-out-of-the-box version of that. I have my own. What Terence pointed out was that if Gaia was conscious, as Nobel Prize-winning biologist James Lovelock suggests, that what she would be most concerned about would not be environmental pollution, but the asteroidal impacts that very reliably every so many millions of years are going to come in and almost sterilize the planet. And so if she were conscious, what she would create would be a technology-extruding primate that would create nuclear weapons and deep space radar and rocketry that could act as a gardener's tool, act as an immune system for the planet, and take out an asteroid that was heading toward the Earth. So the darkest thing that we've invented, the nuclear bomb, could actually turn out to be something that Gaia intended us to create. My version of that apocryphal thing is that perhaps the thing that would bring on the next level of evolution would be a massive thermonuclear war, because what that could uniquely do, more than almost any other scenario, is have the greatest number of spirits leaving the body all at the same time with a great will to live interrupted, and maybe all of that psychic energy emerging all at once would create the next evolutionary species. And, you know, we have to be prepared for something that could just stagger our imagination, because if we look without any willing suspension of disbelief at the evolution of life on this planet, put on one side the one-celled organism and the present human being, suppose there were to be another step as great as that, and if anything, with all the complexification and that we have going on now, that the step might be even a geometric expansion from that, how would that look? How would the human being look to a one-celled organism? That might be as unfathomable as the next stage might be from our vantage point.
Jonathan, in the minutes we have before the top of the hour, tell me a little bit about your website and the two major DVDs you have.
Well, thank you for asking. The website, you can just Google my name if you want to find it, or go to alignment2012.com and click on Jonathan Zaps Pavilion. I cover many of these topics in great detail, a lot of writing on there that's all free. On the DVDs, there is a very thorough four-hour discussion with illustrations of everything that we've talked about tonight and much, much more. I tried to be as concise as possible and get almost everything that I've learned about this onto those two DVDs. They're tried to keep the cost down. They're $19.95 for both 4 hours, and people can order them directly from the website.
Excellent. Caller of the Young, one of our favorite people. Too bad he died at 61. Did you ever have a chance to meet him?
No, I didn't, but I was lucky to be able to make friends with at least one of his colleagues, Werner Engel, and I met a couple other people who had known Young, so I feel close to him, even though we didn't really get to meet.
It's too bad you didn't get a chance to meet Edgar Cayce. You would have enjoyed him as well.
I'm sure I would have.
One of my favorite prophets. Like you say, you know, not everybody was 100% accurate, Jonathan, but some of the things he said about end times, I think, were pretty startling as well.
Yeah, like the Maya, he didn't have to use technological tools to know things. He had that gnosis. He had that ability to look within and make some astounding predictions and diagnoses of people's illnesses.
Well, and he says somewhere in Central America, at the base of one of those pyramids, would be the Hall of Records, too. He thinks one is by the Sphinx in Egypt, but somewhere out there in Central America, there's one, too.
Yeah, and I mean, if that literal prediction doesn't pan out, if we interpret it metaphorically, what he's really saying is that somewhere out there, there is a vast nothing is forgotten. Some people call this the Akashic Record. And we are surrounded by a field of information from which nothing is lost. And any of us can access that by going deep inside.
Well, next hour, it'll be your turn. I know the phones have been ringing. This time, we'll answer them. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Jonathan Zapp. Your questions next hour on Coast to Coast AM.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Stay your head back on.